everybody.
HomoHomo.tv begins right now.
As I was saying, welcome to the Snow Aura Show. I am your host, Nicholas Snow. This is HomoHomo.tv, and today's topic is lesbian love addiction and related topics. So my guest who you're going to meet in a moment is Dr. Lauren Costine, and she is the Chief Clinical Officer of Boulevard Treatment Centers, and she's going to be talking about her new book, Lesbian Love Addiction, Understanding the Urge to Merge and How to Heal When Things Go Wrong. So that is what's coming up on the show right now. Oops, I have an audio thing going on, which is fine. Bear with me. So the audio on my computer is not working, so I want people to hear what I would be saying. And if you're out there watching, please comment whether or not you're hearing me. So this is promohomo.tv, and it's being simulcast on Blog Talk Radio and Facebook Live. It's a worldwide call-in show available on any internet-connected device, and it is presented with the support of Desert AIDS Project, Lulu California Bistro, 849 Restaurant and Lounge, and we're proud media sponsors of the LGBT Community Center of the Desert, Greater Palm Springs Pride, and multiple other organizations. And I'm very happy and proud of that. And so I didn't have all the sound effects that would ordinarily be there, but at least you got the visuals. And now it is time for promohomo.tv. And here I am. And without further ado, I'm going to introduce Dr. Lauren Costine. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm excited that you're here as well. And so lesbian love addiction, that's a very titillating title.
I like to hear that, actually. It wasn't my initial title. My initial title was called The Urge to Merge, which is lesbians who have love addiction tend to merge in our relationships really quickly. But actually, the publishers really wanted it to be in your face. So, and just say, this is what we're dealing with. So that's why I got such a titillating title.
I like it. You know, I promised your friends, I have a live studio audience today. So I want you to say, yeah, they see you wave. This is the first time I've actually had a live studio audience. We're simulcasting on Blog Talk Radio and on Facebook Live, and I have in-studio guests. It's basically the functionality of a three-camera studio and a studio audience and a really wonderful author. So you are coming from personal experience in addiction.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell a little bit about your story?
So I like to say I'm an addict of the highest order. You know, I have just an addictive kind of personality. My first addiction, of course, was to substances, or the most serious one that I had to get sober from. So I got sober many, many years ago, over 17 years ago, I got sober from substances. And that led to using a lot of other types of things to make me feel better. The love addiction component really was very unfamiliar to me. I had never heard of it. I didn't know I had it. It took a very long time to discover this one. It's easy to hide. It's easy to not understand that it's even happening to you because our world is so love-oriented and romantic-oriented. And I don't mean that all in a bad way. Like, love is such an important thing, and we are here to be loved and to love. And it's not a black and white thing here. But this is when love goes wrong, you know, and when it becomes destructive. And so for me, I was actually addicted to the high of falling in love. And once a relationship got real, it was really hard to sustain that for me. And so eventually I had enough multiple bad relationships that I started to say, something's wrong. Something is wrong. What is wrong? And I started seeking help first through books and then through people and then through, you know, some support groups and things like that. And what I found during that time was there was none of the books were written for lesbians, nor did they have any lesbian stories in them. They were very heterosexually oriented. So I found myself translating whenever I was reading a book, and I devoured all of them, and they were very helpful. But for me, I realized, wow, I would love to read something that spoke to me and my world and my lesbian sisters. And from that, this book was born. And there's no translating. It's all about women who love women. And all the examples are of different kinds of lesbians who deal with love addiction, because there's different varying kinds. Not everybody has the kind that I suffer from. And it gets into a lot of different variations of why does this happen? Because not every lesbian has love addiction. So it gets into why this happens, how this happens, and how you can heal from it.
I'm going to show the cover of the book while you continue to tell me. I'd like you to tell me, I'm going to look for the cover of the book, that's what I'm doing, but tell me in the audience, what are the different types of love addiction?
So there is something called love addiction, basically, and that is the more anxious type. That is the love addict who is very anxious about being in a relationship. And once she is in a relationship, she's very anxious in the relationship. Are you going to call? When are you going to call? You didn't return my text in time. I want to see you all the time. There's like an anxious attachment to it of insecurity, and I don't feel like, you love me enough, or I'm very afraid you're going to keep leaving. And it creates this kind of anxiety that can be very difficult to deal with for the other person, that's the partner. The other kind of love addiction that we mostly see is called the love avoidant. And that is the person that can fall in love in the beginning, but once the honeymoon period is over, they really get scared of being smothered, scared of getting trapped, and they'll often be the ones that leave pretty quickly after the fun is over. And we can get into the honeymoon piece in a moment because it's an important component. And then there's the ambivalent type. And the ambivalent type is the one that gets into a relationship but doesn't know if they want to stay or go. And they can stay in that place for a very long time, and they're attached, but they're also afraid, and they kind of have to sit and hold that place of not knowing or feeling really uncomfortable of not knowing for a long time and stay there. And without help, it can be so difficult to deal with.
What's the difference, if there is a difference, between love addiction and sex addiction?
So, yeah, that's a great question, because there is a difference. Sex addiction is more of a compulsive sex disorder. In other words, people are addicted to the act of sex. And it can be with strangers. It can be with pornography. It can be with prostitutes. It can be just finding that person. But it's about the sexual act that they're addicted to, and it becomes compulsive and they can't stop. And then as any addiction, it gets worse and worse and worse and creates a lot of problems in one's life. Not only distress, but it can make one's life unmanageable and worse. Destruction of relationships and destruction of the job and financial issues and so on and so forth. Love addiction is more of an intimacy disorder. Well, sex addiction is an intimacy disorder as well, but love addiction is an intimacy disorder, and it's more based on relationships, and it's more based on falling in love. Like, some love addicts are addicted to the actual feeling you get when you fall in love. So that involves emitting of oxytocin and dopamine, and it feels better than ecstasy. And we're wired to emit those things. But for some love addicts, they will emit a lot of it, and that's intoxicating, and it can be very addicting. So some people are serial monogamists. They don't ever want to be alone. So they jump from one relationship to another to avoid being alone with themselves or avoid the pain that goes with breaking up. Some are serial seducers. I love to bring up the Shane from The L Word. She was sort of the quintessential love avoidant who was a master seducer. And she actually had a lot of anonymous sex too, but she would also seduce women, be really sincere about it, and then when her own fears of being in a relationship came about for her, she would vanish, disappear, without an explanation, and leave her partner devastated, trying to pick up the pieces and figure out what happened. And that can be a common love avoidant behavior.
So for those victims of the addict, who in a sense bear their own responsibility. So for the alcoholic, there's a for AA, there's a program called Al-Anon or Codependent Anonymous, and for the friends and family and partners of love addicts, what do you think that they are inherently unhealthy at some level to even get involved with the person who is the love addict? And what would you suggest for those individuals?
Yeah, I think, you know, getting help in whatever way you can. I mean, the 12-step programs, the Al-Anon, the codependency, no more, you know, the codependency thing can be very, very helpful. There's other sex and love addict support groups out there, community resources out there that can also help if you've been devastated by someone who is a love avoidant. Going to that support group will be very, very helpful. Finding a therapist or a counselor or someone that understands this disorder, understands it, that can be very helpful. You know, it's so much about education, because at this point, the public doesn't know a lot about it, right? So if you find yourself in a situation and you don't know what's going on, but you know that there's something up, and, you know, researching this, you know, getting educated, finding out what's going on so that you can start to heal is the first step.
We have people sending hearts across the screen. For those who are watching, maybe it's your audience members over there. It is. They're sending us hearts.
Thank you.
Yes, if you're out watching, you can call in if you want to talk to Dr. Costain. The call-in number is 347-215-8866. I do have the right screen open on my computer, so I'll be able to notice if someone's called in. That's 347-215-8866, or chat right under the video you're watching. That goes for you, too, if you want to chat, or you can just pipe right in. You know, do you have any questions that come up to mind as you've listened to her talk?
No, I'm just really glad she came out with and she's
fire, you know, really needed. So you won't have heard her, but she says she's very glad that Dr. Costain came out with the book, because it's very important. There hasn't been something like it before, and it's really needed. And that's kind of a paraphrase, but basically, in theory, that's what she said. So tell me how tell me some of the dramatic moments of your own sex and love addiction bottom?
That's such a great question. Being in my we call it a qualifier, so that you don't end up ever saying the person's name, also because the name can be very traumatizing for a while, and also, you know, keeping it anonymous. But the relationship that sent me to my bottom and where I ended up getting help, I lost myself. First of all, I completely lost myself. Like, I lost my sense of self. I became pretty care dependent in nuanced ways. They're harder to see because I was doing things to please her, but it wasn't that obvious. You know, it was more like just giving in or not standing up for myself, holding on to my boundaries, things like that. They were not that strong before, and I didn't know how to do it. Yelling and screaming and getting into these huge, horrible fights, not who I am, honestly, you know, and I would say my bottom was so much about that. And then when it didn't work out, what really got my attention was what we call the withdrawals. So the withdrawals are during the breakup period. Now, we call it a broken heart for a reason, right? And anyone that loses a relationship that they were deeply attached to can go through a heartbreak. There's no doubt about it. When it has that love addiction component to it, where maybe you are the addict and the anxious one and you were dumped by an avoidant, the pain can be so devastating that it's dangerous. It leads to a lot of relapse for people who are sober, and especially in early sobriety. So that's why for people who are in early sobriety, you want to be really careful about relationships, or if you try to find out if you have love addiction. It's you can fall into a deep, deep depression, even if you've never been depressed before. So you may not even be a depressive type, but you can fall into a deep depression, which means you stop enjoying life, you have no energy, you're tired, you either can eat or you can't stop eating, difficulty sleeping, irritability, not wanting to get off the floor, basically, not wanting to leave your house, suicidal ideation, very common during this time. Feeling like you're going crazy, very common during this time. Like, I could go crazy. Something is that wrong with me. And it's during this time that either people seek help, you know, lesbians will seek help during this time because it's that painful. And that's obviously a motivator for a lot of us who get free of addictions, you know, or get help for our addictions. Or you go back into a relationship because that falling in love period can get rid of the withdrawals very quickly. So it's a delicate time, and for me, I had already started looking into my love addiction before that, before this last relationship. I had had other very devastating relationships, so I had read some books, and I had some, you know, I planted some seeds, and so this time, I got serious. It's kind of like, you know, you have another addiction, you kind of dance with it for a while, you're not ready. You know, and then eventually the bottom is so bad or the pain is so extreme. It's like, I don't have a choice. I have got to do something about this. This is not working. And that's what I did.
Okay. I'm all about sharing experience, strength, and hope myself. So I just wanted to acknowledge for my audience that may not know, I have over 15 years sober. I personally don't say what 12-step programs I use, but I find many of them can be beneficial for people that are dealing with issues around food, sex, alcohol, substances, spending, relationship with self and others. Did I leave anything out?
Workaholism.
Workaholism. Maybe I'm doing that right now.
That one's another one that's sanctioned by society, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah.
One of the things that I want to get into, so your colleagues that helped you find my show would be remiss if we don't talk about Boulevard Treatment Centers.
For sure, of course.
So we will talk about treatment, but when did you decide to go for the PhD and to become the doctor and develop this specialty?
So, yeah, it's interesting. I got sober, and while I was in treatment myself, I realized that what I got the most joy out of was helping my peers in treatment. So I started to set my toes into looking into therapy myself, being a therapist, I mean. I was in therapy, and I started saying to my therapist, I kind of think I might want to do what you do. It's really interesting. So it was really getting sober from substances that led me into the healing profession. And when I started my master's program, I knew I was going to get my PhD. I come from like a long line of PhDs on my father's side. And even though that was never like, oh, Lauren, that's what you're going to do. For me, I just knew I wanted to go all the way, that I wanted to take my education as far as I could. I had a ton of energy back then, and I just wanted to go with it while I had it. So, and I wanted to get the clinical psychology license as well, which is, you know, the one that you get from the PhD. So I just wanted to help people. During that time, particularly when I was getting my PhD, I came out as a lesbian. It was a difficult thing for me to do. As a femme, it can be a little bit harder for some of us, especially the time period that I came of age was very homophobic. I came out as bi, and it was just, you know, a tough, tough time.
Are you bi, or was that your first step in identifying as a lesbian?
For me, that was my first step. That's not for everybody, and I'm a big believer in bisexuality. That's not what I mean here.
No, I understand.
Yeah.
I'm a believer in bisexuality as well.
Yeah, exactly.
But often in the coming, and even my own experience in coming out, I think it's easier, at least at that time. I mean, I'm a bit older than you are, but we're a lot older than people that have grown up, that are 18 coming
right.
out in a whole new world.
Right.
But so a first step for me was to think, oh, I might be bisexual.
Yeah.
And then I basically came to learn that I think human beings are capable of being bisexual, but the fundamental orientation of someone is altogether different.
Yes, exactly. That's a really, really great way of putting it. So for that part of it, and when that happened, I ended up getting introduced to some really interesting psychologists who are also activists. And that sung to me. You know, I wanted to continue to fight for you know, our rights and equality, not only from a literal sense, you know, what became the marriage equality campaign and so on and so forth, but also our trauma from growing up in a world that has hated us, you know, for thousands of years. So that became a big part of what I do. And what I learned for that was something called LGBTQ affirmative psychotherapy, which specifically addresses our unique trauma growing up in a heterosexually oriented society that has a lot of LGBTQ phobias, you know. And obviously it's gotten a lot better, and it's different in different states and different cities, and we've got these wonderful urban cities that are not like this, but, you know, you don't even have to go that far sometimes from an urban city to experience some phobias. And we are also dealing with right now the backlash of the marriage equality, the trans movement. We are seeing all the hatred that a lot of people have. So we are far from being where we need to be, where we are not hated by people. And this is very traumatizing. Even if you have a sense of pride, being a minority in this sense and hearing all of this all the time is difficult. It's damaging. And we get these messages early on in childhood. And even when you don't know who you are or what your sexual orientation is, especially in our generation, Nicholas, right, it's like you and I know what we heard when we were growing up, right?
It's nice of you to put me in your generation. I think I might be a bit older.
Well, but it's,
I understand what you mean, yes.
And the messages were it was deviant, abnormal, not okay. And you know, the list goes on and on. So
I was just showing your Facebook page. You have a professional Facebook page,
yes.
Lauren D. Costing, PhD, and you have a practice in Beverly Hills. I wanted people to see that while you were talking. Continue.
So, yeah, so the affirmative approach is teaching about that, what it's like to grow up in a heterosexually oriented society, what we call heteronormativity or heterosexism, the different LGBTQ phobias, you know, that are out there, depending on, you know, what your family was like, if you grew up in a church that was very phobic, your town, your peers, were you bullied, you know, were you picked on, a lot of us were picked on, you know, all of these things add up to big T's and little T's, right, big traumas and little traumas. They get internalized, and then they affect the sense of self.
Did you need to go to treatment for the sex and love issues?
I did, actually. I didn't go to, because I was professional and working and so on and so forth, I didn't go to anything over 2 weeks, but I went to two different places to help me with this.
And tell me how you connected with Boulevard Treatment Centers in Los Angeles. That's capital BLVD if you're Googling. And what you're doing with them.
Yeah, I was approached by them when they were first starting. I am one of the founding members. Initially to start an LGBT track in our outpatient in Hollywood, on Highland. And I had helped. I was one of the founding members of the LGBT specialization at Antioch University in Culver City, where we were training marriage and family therapists how to work in this affirmative way. And then I was asked to create a track and kind of get involved with the flagship facility. And I created that track, and there's a wonderful therapist, Damien Gonzalez, who's running it there now. And then while getting involved in the center and having all my addiction experience and working in treatment centers before, I was asked to come on eventually as the chief clinical officer overseeing the whole clinical mission of the program, because we have 8 facilities now.
Well, congratulations on that. Now, you didn't go to treatment and inpatient treatment. Tell me how what Boulevard's approach is and treatment centers in general for the treatment of love and sex addiction, which is often tied into alcoholism and drug abuse. But what's different when the love and sex addiction is involved?
So we have a group specifically for all of our clients. And they are oriented towards one sexual orientation. So within the LGBTQ track, it's for that community. And then for the straight clients, they go to their own. It's called Healthy Intimacy. We teach a lot about sex addiction, love addiction, sex and love addiction, the different kinds of intimacy disorders we were just talking about earlier, and how that ties in to, and how it's a common second addiction, right, a co-occurring disorder, as we call it, and how to watch out for the red flags, the pitfalls, and, you know, taking care of yourself in early recovery so that you hopefully don't slide into a sex or love addiction that can take you out, because it is a very common predictor of relapse. If someone early on gets into a lover sex addiction relationship, it can be very, very challenging to stay sober.
You know, just to share a little bit about my own issues around this, because I think that sharing experience, strength, and hope is important. But I'd love to just say that I think that I could classify as a love avoider. I think that those were fundamentally rooted in the lack of authentic self-esteem, which I have developed in working a variety of programs and with a therapist over time. How does someone who is a love avoider know it? What are telltale signs of someone who's a love avoider?
Okay, so there's a couple of them. One of them is, and it's not for everyone, but a lot of times they're seducers, and they get off on being seductive and the chase. Okay, so like Shane, again, is the example of loving the chase. Loving, once they get the girl, they're kind of like, I'm done. You know, and we see this in all, you know, avoiders across sexual orientation lines, but that is a common trait. They like the early stage of the relationship, but don't like once it gets real, like at all. That's when their mind starts saying, I got to leave. I got to flee. This is too much. And there's a fear of being smothered. That's a very common trait for a love avoider, and there's like a fear of being smothered. It can definitely be a reaction to whatever happened in their childhood. They don't want that experience in adulthood. It can be avoiding relationships, you know, altogether. You know, it's too scary. It's too hard. Once we have to really negotiate and figure things out, that's not the fun part. I don't like it anymore, and I find myself losing interest. It's really kind of about losing interest quite easily, inadvertently, and in an unintentionally. It's a very unconscious situation.
Me, I think it's been avoiding situations where I could authentically connect and actually focusing my time and energy in places where it's going to be practically impossible to authentically connect, like on online apps.
Right.
So, for example, one of the things that I've been doing is I no longer have any online profiles, and I've come up with particular guidelines for myself. So I'm not interested in having anonymous sex. I'm not interested in having sex with a stranger. I'm not interested in having sex with someone who's unavailable. I would prefer to engage with someone sexually that I've at least had a conversation with. Doesn't mean I'm anti-casual sex, but I want to connect on the level of mind, body, and spirit, and I am in touch enough with my own value that I'm not going to that I prefer not to engage with someone that is just looking for a short, quick experience.
Right. Well, I think that sounds actually like a healthy boundary.
All of that. No, all of that.
Yeah.
This is where I am now.
Right,
but this is after, you know, they say in life and in many ways, they say that insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And I completely have lost track about how many times I have added and deleted Grindr and Scruff to this phone. And I'm so glad that it isn't here. And I'm not saying what programs I'm in, but I turned it over to my sponsor. I thought, in addition to working on this, I need to work on this,
right,
and this.
Exactly.
And I'm grateful that I have a sponsor that is able to address a lot of different issues.
Right.
So I am starting to write about all of these issues.
I used to
use a single program to address issues, and then when I realized that the other issues needed more attention, and I connected the dot that I have a sponsor that can work with me on those issues, well, hey, that's what I'm doing.
That's great. That's wonderful. Well, you know, that's not uncommon what you're talking about, particularly with gay men, with these Grindr, you know, and the anonymous stuff being so accessible. It is also a fear of intimacy. ultimately.
Totally.
Right?
I got it.
Yeah, and that's the trauma for gay men that they, you know, I know I hear from working with gay men and also all my gay male friends saying, like, it's really hard to connect in our community, you know. You can go out there and the men are unavailable or they do just want to still kind of hook up. And, you know, you've gone through life to a point where you're like, wow, that is not working.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have to go through that other component of, okay, where am I going to find the person that's in the same place that I am? And that can be very scary for anyone recovering from these kind of past relationship history and behaviors. It's like, am I ever going to find anybody that's on the same page that I am? You know, and it's really about being in your spiritual, psychological program, kind of believing that that person, if you really want to find someone, is out there. It's not going to be necessarily easy once you do connect, because if you have intimacy stuff from the past, it's going to be learning it new in a healthy relationship, right? But it's so possible, especially with the help of sponsors or professionals that know how to work with couples. Like, it can be so helpful.
Well, thank you for your feedback. Getting back to the key focus of your book, Lesbian Love Addiction, I think it's not surprising that gay men would be dealing with sex addiction. I think it is more surprising that they're dealing with love addiction, but we do. I think it does surprise people that there is such a thing as lesbian love addiction, but of course there is.
Yeah.
So speak more to what is unique in the lesbian community around these issues and how you might, what approach to treatment you take in that event.
So I think what's...
And how does a lesbian know that she might be a love addict?
So this is good. So these are all great questions, and they're all answered in my book, by the way, because I really get into why does this book need to exist and how is it different than all of the heterosexually oriented books, particularly for women that have been out there in the past, because there's quite a few. So it is because, and this is the obvious one that the people forget all the time, it's two women in a relationship. And women, our brains are actually wired a little bit differently than men. Men's brains are wired differently than ours in certain key components. One of them is we are wired to connect. We are wired to be in relationships.
You're wired to U-Haul.
Yes, exactly. And that's in my book. By the way, I talk about that, right?
Oh, okay. I haven't had a chance to read the book yet.
But, yeah. I, you know, the U-Haul joke is here for a reason,
right.
And it exists. I've done it myself, you know. Unwittingly, not realizing.
Listen, I would move in on the second date. I've told you.
Hey, yes. Perfect.
I told you I'm an honorary lesbian,
yes.
Because I'm wearing Birkenstocks. Okay,
right.
I got to show. I'm wearing Birkenstocks, and I have not been having sex with men either. So I'm an honorary lesbian.
Yes.
I digress.
So the brain is different. We are wired to connect. So. In a way that's very, very specific. Our brain is telling us to do that, right? And we are wired to, like, look into each other's faces and all these different things that we do. We produce a lot of a hormone called oxytocin. Men produce it too, but women produce a lot of it when they're falling in love and when they're nursing a baby. And it's actually extremely intoxicating. It is. It feels really good. And so does dopamine, as we know, right? So you get those two. Those are admitted when a lesbian is falling in love. Then there's another lesbian who's admitting the same chemicals. Those chemicals are actually meeting each other in the air, you know, while you're kissing and making out and having sex and all of these things. And the next thing you know, I call it the oxytocin fest. You know, there is just like, it doesn't get better than this. And so that's one of the things that a lot of us love addicts get addicted to is that high. It's actually not, a lot of drugs can't even come close to it. So, and it produces naturally, and so you think there's nothing bad about it. And there isn't ultimately, and this is not a black and white situation, it's complex and nuanced. But when that is the thing that gets you to do this over and over and over again because you want that feeling again, because we, all human beings are wired to omit those honeymoon feelings for 2 years maximum, and then they stop. And lesbians tend to burn it out really fast because we are doing it so intensely and we're U-Hauling. And we have one date and the next thing you know, we're spending every day together. And so we're kind of burning this stuff really fast and it goes out much sooner than 2 years. And then suddenly you're looking at somebody that you don't know very well. You may not have that much in common. You don't know how to figure out negotiations and issues and problems. And it can start to become very problematic, and things can kind of melt down really fast. Then you've got the aspect of losing your sense of self within that, becoming pretty codependent, taking care of your partner more than yourself, you know, not nurturing your friendships, not nurturing your program, not nurturing, not doing self-care things, because everything becomes focused on this amazing relationship that you're in. And it when it is in that sense, that love at its essence, it falls apart.
You know, just to tell on myself, all right, because I think that, once again, when we express the truth of our lives to ourselves, to others, to people who are experts, that we do better. So someone sought me out, wanted to meet me. We met a couple of times, and I thought that this person was interested in me, and I do not drink. I'm not afraid of drinking, but he drinks. So what I did was I bought vodka and put it in my freezer. So I had, and he's a vegetarian, so I bought the kind of food that he eats, even though this isn't food that I necessarily wanted to eat, and sort of the food that I bought for him would be counterproductive for me. And it never went further, because I kind of, and I realized that when he didn't respond to my text, that I really needed to stop texting him. And ultimately, I changed his name in my phone to Danger Will Robinson.
Oh my God.
And then I frankly just deleted it. And I came up with it's not that I've ruled him out completely. It's just I've realized, okay, if something continues with him, I'm not going to use alcohol as a bait to get him to my apartment. I'm not going to have food in my apartment that I don't want to also eat. And, you know, so all kinds of things. So go ahead and be blunt toward me or anyone in that situation. What have I just described?
Losing your sense of self.
Oh, I like that. Okay.
Yeah.
That was easy.
And that's what we do. You know, people that suffer from any sort of intimacy disorder lose their sense of self really easily once they find someone that they think they might be excited about. Like, oh my gosh, you know, I'm going to do whatever it takes. And I'm not saying this is a conscious thought, you know, you're kind of just like trying to figure it out. So that's why in recovery from these addictions, whichever attachment style you end up having, and it's relationship dependent, by the way. You might do that with somebody else and not with another man, you know. It's about getting a solid sense of self, a much more solid sense of self, knowing how to stick to your boundaries, knowing that it's okay to keep your own food in your fridge and you guys would go get that food at a restaurant, and not keeping vodka in your house, and that he can get drinks in another way.
Well, the vodka in the house doesn't bother me, but I shouldn't buy vodka just because I'm trying to get someone who drinks
that's
to come to my apartment.
That's what I mean. I'm not saying because it bothers you. It's because you were doing it for reasons that were sort of not really healthy for you.
Right. If he's going to come here, I'm enough for him. And
right.
If he's not going to come here just for me, I don't, you know, bring your own vodka if you want it.
Yes, and that's a boundary right there. It's about, you know, saying, I'm enough, and I don't need to do all these things to be enough for somebody else or to track somebody.
Well, we're coming to sort of the end of the interview. We could go another 20 minutes if we wanted to, but I think we've talked about a lot of issues, and we can bring them together by this. And I think a fundamental core mission of both of us is to help people find and express their true selves,
yeah,
and to live full, actualized lives,
yeah,
and to identify and follow their dreams,
yeah,
and to, because life happens once,
yeah,
you know, that we know of for sure.
Right. Well, you will only be Nicholas once.
Right, exactly. So what kind of feedback are you getting from the people you work with?
A tremendous feedback. Like, this really works. This really, really works. If you do it in this way that's outlined in the book, you have the affirmative approach, you deal with the trauma of being a lesbian in a misogynistic and homophobic world, you deal with the attachment issues that you have because of the things that happened in your childhood, you look at the relationship that you had with your family of origin, you look at your fragile sense of self, you work on healing all of that, you look at it from a trauma perspective and a healing perspective, and then you learn how to love yourself what a healthy boundary is. You do a lot of psychoeducation around it. And then when that is kind of done, then you start thinking about dating, you know. And I always say take a break from dating for sure once you realize that you have this addiction and start dating yourself, you know, and really do the inner work that it needs to heal so that you're not looking for somebody else to fulfill it for you. That person will be a compliment in your life when you find them and when they find you, and then you learn how to navigate that relationship in a healthy way, and then I suggest you get help for that as well, because it's hard.
For me, the biggest gift of all of this, which I really do possess today, is authentic, sustainable self-esteem.
Yeah, exactly. It's so important.
Since we've had the benefit of having a studio audience, you've listened to a very comprehensive conversation. Are there any questions or comments that come to mind for either of you? No?
Yeah.
No, okay, that's all right. They're not, yeah, I thought, well, you know. And I want to thank everyone who's been watching. Oops, just a second, I need to find, oh, here we are, we're back. Resume, okay. I just paused our show for just a moment. I want to thank everyone who's been watching. Do you have any final remarks?
You know, my feeling is if you have any inkling that something is going wrong in your relationship history and you just know in your gut that things could be different for you, then go do the research, you know, get the books, buy my book, but or look at other books, I've got a landing page, www.lesbianloveaddiction.com. I've got a lot of blogs on there. Also things that talk about how to have, you know, what are the signs of a healthy relationship. Go find out how to educate yourself and what kind of ways you can go out there and get support and professional help or, you know, community resource support so that you can really take care of yourself, heal your trauma, heal the pain, you know, get an authentic, healthy sense of self that you truly love, and then, you know, you will be in such a good place, a better place than you've ever been before, and it's worth it.
And they're worth it.
And they're worth it.
For the people who are watching also, if you go to promohomo.tv, you're going to find the blog that is associated with today's show, and the headline is, author Lauren Costine discusses lesbian love addiction, understanding the urge to merge and how to heal when things go wrong. That's the title of her book. You can also find links to her websites, to Boulevard Treatment Centers, where she is the chief clinical officer, and, of course, to Lesbian Love Addiction on Amazon. It's so nice to spend some time with you on the road to happy destiny.
Yes, thank you, Nicholas. It's been wonderful.
You're welcome. Thank you. Now, usually I would end my show by pointing to my computer and playing this fun video, but I already know that there's an issue with the audio on my computer. Find me at promohomo.tv. And I usually end the radio show before after I end the Facebook, but since I'm going to reverse it, so I'm going to say thank you for everyone listening in Radio Land. Goodbye for now. See you next time. Go to promohomo.tv.